I'm Charlie Skelton. I generally write jokes for entertainment TV shows, but in my spare time, I follow Bilderberg around the world, or at least I have done since 2009 in Greece, when I started covering it for The Guardian. And I covered it every year. I mean, covered. I did my best to cover it every year since. And then, blessedly, they had a break for a couple of years. For COVID, and that gave me some time off, and then they've suddenly announced that it's not announced. It's been found out. They wouldn't announce such a thing. It's been found out that it's the this year's conference is likely to be in Lisbon, and I spend a bit of time in Portugal, so it's suddenly on my doorstep again. So
Yeah,
more.
it is. Can you just say what you make of it, how Bilderberg fits in? Because there's all sorts of different organisations. We're just hearing last weekend about the Ditchley Foundation with a big conference last week in order to try and oppose Brexit. There is the Trilateral Commission, which Keir Starmer is a part of. There's the World Economic Forum. There's all sorts of these kind of places where people get together. But the thing that I think characterises Bilderberg is there isn't really much criticism coverage of it, and certainly very little proper analysis. So how does it all fit in?
Well, I was it, it it in my mind, it's something a bit like in the film Independence Day, when there's the sort of mothership is there and it kind of peels off into a bunch of discs that kind of hover around the world doing their thing. And I sort of think that it's a bit like that. You have these kind of interlocking yet separate entities, like, as you say, the World Economic Forum or the Munich Security Conference. That's another one, more on the defense side of things. Or the Trilateral Commission, and they kind of share a lot of people, and they these just these events just sort of, it's like a kind of weird social calendar for the elite, and they occur most years, and I think the Munich Security Conference starts on Friday of this week. And I think Stoltenberg is opening that up, and Stoltenberg is always, or generally always, at Bilderberg. And so yeah, Bilderberg is kind of one of these entities, and it has its own sort of flavour, and it's its own kind of the way you can see how it's evolved, and it's evolved towards. It's always been, about the Transatlantic Alliance, and it's now a place where, it's kind of like a NATO. A sort of top-level NATO business conference sort of
Yeah, it
thing.
certainly is. I mean, it links in with the NATO countries. The other thing that I've sort of come to understand just in the last week or so, listening to some of the Russian commentators, is that they say, well, we don't really take Western governments seriously as negotiating partners anymore. We know we need to be negotiating with the big banks, the big corporations. These are the transnationals. These are the guys that seem to be calling the shots. And certainly they're pretty well represented at Bilderberg.
But they certainly are. I mean, and also, particularly the big tech at the moment is it's over the last kind of decade, the shift of Bilderberg towards AI has been remarkable. And now they're kind of interfacing with, by which I mean NATO and AI, where you've got Alex Karp, who runs Palantir, and he sits on the board of the steering committee of Bilderberg, alongside his kind of sort of boss, Peter Thiel, who and Palantir, Alex Karp said the other day that Palantir is running all of the targeting that's going on in Ukraine. So they're a big AI company. They're the ones that have been chomping up NHS medical data and such, and they've just got some £75 million contract with the Department of Defense, etc. They're everywhere, and they're really building themselves into this kind of new world of militarized AI.
Well, hey, Charlie, I mean, it's just science fiction, isn't it? I think the film was Colossus, the Forbin Project, where a computer starts being used as a way to defend in a potential nuclear conflict and ends up actually taking over all of the it's very much like the sort of Terminator. So if you're handing over these decisions and prioritizing, it's almost like a giant chess game being done by a chess computer now.
Yeah, and so Karp is talks about this a lot, and he's just done a talk at some conference, yet another conference, which is convened in Holland by the Dutch government about militarized AI. And he did one of the keynote talks, which I haven't listened to yet, but he is on YouTube. So everyone go out and listen to that, because he's, if you're listening to Alex Karp talking about militarized AI, you're actually listening to something that at least is coming from the horse's mouth. Well, that's horse as in one of the horsemen of the apocalypse. So Bilderberg has got the AI bunch and all the Silicon Valley billionaire kind of flavor to it, but it also has, as I say, intelligence. And so last year was in Washington. It just popped up without anyone really knowing it was going to be anywhere, and it was absolutely packed with National Security Council people and spooks, even more than usual. And it's always pretty packed, but this was really, they were thick on the ground. But I mean, not surprising, it was in Washington.
For those that aren't familiar with it, it does alternate pretty much every year between North America and Europe. It does consist entirely of NATO countries, or I suppose we might have the Finns and the Swedes starting to turn up. They've had the Swedes over the years, but this is really, I suppose, acknowledging that the Swedes have always been pretty tied in since World War II into the NATO alliance. How did you come to discover whereabouts Bilderberg was taking place this year? We've heard that it's going to be at the Pestana Palace Hotel in Lisbon. I think, isn't it, around about the 17th of May, where these 120 or so of the people that control most of the money in the Western world and seem to be steering so much of the policy are going to be getting together. How did you discover this?
Well, there's a magazine that kind of uncovers corruption and political scandals and such in Portugal called Tal e Qual. And they found that a couple of big Portuguese wigs, one of whom is Barroso, the former head of the European Commission and former Prime Minister of Portugal, and Bilderberg Steering Committee member, had set up a company called something like, I can't remember what it's called. It's called something like Secret Conference 2023 or something like that. But anyway, they found it's not Secret Conference, but it was something like that. And so they discovered that Barroso had set up this company to run the conference this year. So that meant it was almost certainly Portugal. I mean, you know, so that narrowed it down massively. I'd already tweeted something that it was like my money was on Portugal or Scandinavia, precisely for the NATO reasons, you know, something like Finland or Sweden. Sweden would have been my pick, but Sweden or Portugal kind of thing. And it turned out to be Portugal. And then it was just a question of grinding through the very few luxury hotels that could house such an event. That had to be big enough, swanky enough, and have enough of a conference, big enough conference centre, and be free on some potential dates. So just a sort of really boring bit of data analysis on TripAdvisor, and we found that this massive hotel, very very lovely hotel in Lisbon, was block booked for this time, and. So that seemed like an ideal candidate. Then we went back to the Tal e Qual, the magazine, and gave them what we thought was a possible lead. And then they spoke to the Lisbon police and found out that there were various roadblocks planned for that period, and that sort of thing. And so it kind of crystallized around that. So, which is, you know, it's unusual. Like last year, the conference had begun by the time anyone who generally sort of follows it had realized it was actually happening. They'd moved it from their usual place in Chantilly to the middle of Washington, and it kept it very low. Very on the left, even for Bilderberg, it was on the down low.
I mean, it kind of suggests that this really is a US operation, doesn't it? The fact that they're able to keep it quiet over there, but they're having difficulty doing that when it comes to Europe. But I think, you know, the other thing is why this is Well, why it matters to actually get a handle on this as long beforehand as possible. I remember going to Jean Val, really on the with no real understanding. This is around about 2000, I think it was, in Belgium. No understanding, really, whether we were going to see a conference or anything was going to turn up at all. And it was only on the Friday that the you know it became clear there really was a conference, or the Thursday, and we came down in the evening, and it was a it was definitely a conference taking place, and a friend of a friend got onto the press, and suddenly there was an absolute, you know, like it was literally in that on the Saturday all the press was down there, and they were, even at that point, they were still saying, actually, this is an international croquet competition, you've got it all wrong. So there seems to be a quite a concerted attempt, certainly on the US side, to make sure people don't find out that this is even happening. So I think, you know, in a way, you've done quite well with the Portuguese paper and getting such a good, you know, months before it's actually taking place.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Lisbon is it's pretty accessible as you know, as cities and venues go. You know, it's not in the north of Norway or something. It's, you know, it's cheap flights and it's not far from the airport, broadly speaking. And it's, you know, within Lisbon, it's in a kind of slightly strange little area, but with not much going on. Like, the nearest hotels aren't that near, but they're near enough. And, you know, it's not far from the river. So, you know, I imagine there'll be some nice riverside cafe discussions.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a lot of people that I've met over the years, some of my best contacts, friends even, I've met at these Bilderberg conferences at a kind of unofficial counter conference, which often takes place in the bars around hotels. Mm. Have you had a look at decent hotels for people that want to come and either cover or simply just observe the Bilderbergers in action this May?
Well, I mean, there are, you know, your best bet is to go to TripAdvisor and have a look. But, you know, it depends. There's some slightly lower rent ones, cheaper ones, but there's also some, like the Hyatt, which seems quite nice, is on the river, if you've got a little bit more money to spend on chasing globalists around the globe.
Is it a good idea, do you think, to have to announce a sort of place beforehand that people that want to cover the conference can focus on?
Well, possibly. I mean, yeah, I mean, like, even just to say a bunch of us are staying here or something, you know. But that hasn't really, that discussion, which will take place on various, I'm sure, email threads and Telegram groups, etc., will gradually crystallise, I think, over the next, you know, several months. God, I mean, it's coming soon, isn't it? But, you know, I imagine it will be fairly unofficial, and, you know, it's the kind of thing where a big hotel bar is as good a place as any, or a big restaurant that stays open late. But it'll be, you know, everything will stay open late. It's you know, it's Lisbon in May. It'll be absolutely lovely. You know, thank God.
I always remember Jim Tucker used to kind of hold court, you know, because he'd usually been there. Like, this is a guy from the States that used to cover it regularly, and he'd done a lot of work usually in the week or so before the conference had started, and so the conference itself for him was, you know, kind of rest period in a way. And so, you know, you could always go and have a chat to Jim, interview him. He was just kind of sitting there in a chair, you know. But anyway, look, this is 10 years after one of the biggest protests against Bilderberg ever. That was, I'm very proud to say, here in the UK, in Watford. That was, you know, thousands of people coming to that. I'm not quite sure how many. But the whole Bilderberg thing seems to have kind of dropped off the radar a bit. In fact, hardly any press and very little protest last year at all, you know. So what do you make of that drop off in interest?
It is slightly mysterious to me, because it's not like it's corresponding to a drop off of, as it were, you know, seniority or importance of the people going to Bilderberg. If anything, that's got more highfalutin. And, you know, I mean, the last one I went to, this Pompeo, the Secretary of State, turned up in the biggest convoy of, you know, armored trucks and limousines I've ever seen in my life. Just this, it was like the Empire arriving in Star Wars. And, you know, it was this huge, but, you know, so the Secretary of State was there. You've got, you know, you had von der Leyen was there, just so many big There was so much security you couldn't even believe it. Like we were up in some balcony, and when Pompeo arrived, an armored truck opened its rear doors and pointed a quite heavy machine gun at our balcony, just to make sure we weren't doing anything other than taking photos. But it was a slightly weird moment. But, you know, and when I say, you know, us, it was just, you know, like half a dozen people up on a balcony. But, you know, even that time, so that was what, 20, oh God, which one was it? Whenever that was, the one on the shores of Lake Geneva, that had at least some sort of alternative press there. You know, and some bloggers and some Bilderberg followers and, you know, the usual, you know, whether it's Luke Wodowski and, you know, that sort of gang and Dan Dix and all of that. This time Luke was pretty much one of the only people to get there. So it was a startling drop off. And so why that's happened, I don't fully know. I can't, you know, it's one of the great mysteries, because you've got Stoltenberg doing extremely high level NATO briefings to some of the most important and influential politicians and bankers in the world, and yet, you know, there's two people standing outside.
Yeah, the press don't really seem to take much of an interest. Is that just simply because they don't get a formal invite?
Well, I mean, there's plenty of press in there, but the people, like, as in, you know, the sort of pet columnists, whether it's, you know, Anne Applebaum or, you know, someone like Martin Wolf or Gideon Rickman. That's how tired I am. So, you know, you have your pet columnists, you have your various media owners, you know, like some of the big European media houses and things like that are there. So, you know, the sort of press inside, but, you know, precious little sort of interface between that and there and anyone actually writing stuff from the outside.
I always remember, I think it was at Versailles in Paris, that we had one of the Greek finance minister actually came out to have a chat with us and a cigarette, saying, God, you know, I tried to smuggle out a list to you guys, but this is an absolutely awful atmosphere in there. You know, I can't bear it. And this, of course, is, you know, it seems almost like chalk and cheese. There are some elite that are part of this wealthy conspiracy, is probably the only thing you can call it. They don't really have the time of day to spend with anybody that's not in their inner circle, plus the rest of us. And occasionally they try and bring somebody who is one of the rest of us, like this Greek finance minister, into their smoke-filled rooms with their armed guards and everything outside, and schmooze them. So I just wonder, you know, is there really any, do you think, movement these days? Do you think people are being convinced from the outside to become part of this? Because I wonder whether the Bilderbergers are really able to, you know, persuade people to get on side. They seem to have almost succeeded in their post-war mission to try and bring people in on this financial elite.
Yeah, I mean, look, the schmoozing networking side of things is hugely important. And it's, you know, so, and this, as you say, this bringing people in and kind of seeing how they get on, and then if it's, you know, they're getting the nod, and then they might even join the steering committee if they, you know, find real favor within the inner circle. And, you know, you'll see suddenly someone brought in, and then, and some people like George Osborne looked like they were going to join the steering committee and then hasn't, because he went for a lot of years, and I would have put money on it, but it just hasn't quite worked out for him. Maybe, I don't know, maybe his little champion within the inside didn't fully.
Well, I think it's more likely that he wasn't enough of a brainy strategist, because that's what most of these steering committee people seem to be. And they do seem to be moving towards, as you said at the start, you know, more emphasis. I mean, but to begin with, it was, you know, largely a sort of Rockefeller oil style leadership. Now it seems to be much more to do with social media, tech, IT, and as you're saying, things like this Palantir. I mean, that for people that don't know, that's taken from the Lord of the Rings, the idea that, you know, we can now use this amazing kind of crystal ball to see what's going on everywhere. And it's almost like, you know, the eye of God. This is the tool that the new gods use to see what the rest of us are all up to.
Yeah. And sorry, do you need to get that?
Well, I'm just really asking about what you think the sort of shift of emphasis from being in, you know, oil commodities and that sort of thing. Now it all seems to be social media, tech, and PayPal, this kind of thing.
Well, I think it's part of the kind of, you know, the new digital identity that we're all shifting towards. And there's a lot of the people here who would be creating, you know, when I say here, sorry, like who turned up at the last Bilderberg, and many of the people who are on the steering committee of Bilderberg are the people who would be sort of shaping that digital future. And, you know, you hear a lot more about it at the World Economic Forum because they're, you know, their initiatives are kind of more open and shared. I mean, they're real planners, aren't they? I mean, you know, he was, Schwab is a kind of business planner. That's his sort of background. You know, it used to be kind of the European, whatever it was, management forum or something, and before it became the World Economic Forum. And these people are constantly planning our digital future and shaping it. And you know, everything is about shaping this. But I sort of see Bilderberg, you know, so you know the World Economic Forum has got its kind of young global leaders thing. It's Bilderberg's a bit like a kind of middle-aged global leaders thing, where you know you've joined, you're a bit older, you've come up through the ranks, you've been sifted through various kind of you know, forums and conferences, and you've schmoozed, and you've found yourself chit-chattering to the right people, whether it's, I don't know, David Petraeus, or I don't know, Marcus.
So what is it you think, Charlie, all these people have in common? There's something obviously that does link them, and the idea that they like to be part of the clique. But what's the mindset of this clique? What's inside their heads?
Well, they're going to be telling us what's inside our heads soon enough. but what's inside their heads? I don't really know. Who knows? I mean, if you just had to sort of say, and I don't think there's one thing, by the way. And you know, there's a lot of them are saying, you know, what's inside the head? Well, it's what is, how can I get the best for HSBC or Axel Springer or, you know, or Banco Santander or Goldman Sachs? You know, so you've got Barroso, who's running this year's conference. So he joined Goldman Sachs International as chairman. And so he's the previous chairman, maybe there was one between, but it was Peter Sutherland, another the Irish businessman and diplomat who was a long time Bilderberg steering committee member. So there's this kind of, and there's so many links in with Goldman Sachs.
Well, this is Rishi Sunak's old firm, isn't it?
It's so many people's old firms, old current firms, you know, in many cases in Bilderberg. But so Barroso runs that. So, you know, what's his motivation? I don't know. I saw him come out of one Bilderberg absolutely hammered. And, you know, so I think he likes a good meal. So that's, you know, that's part, you know, the boss of the Goldman Sachs International bottom line, plus, you know, a nice claret.
But we mustn't mention Henry Kissinger. I mean, he's the sort of, Davros at the top table, you know, and but the interesting thing is, many people don't realize he, as the sort of guru of Bilderberg, and Schwab from the World Economic Forum go back a long way, don't they?
They do, and it kind of gets slightly lost in the mists of wherever it is, late 60s Harvard. But it's a long way back, and it looks like Kissinger kind of groomed him a bit. Or certainly they moved in the same circle. This is back when Kissinger was running that, whatever it was called, International Summer School or something at Harvard, and which was kind of, he ran his own sort of mini Bilderberg. So he would, you could see, it, so he's so compatible with Bilderberg. You can see why he joined so early and rose so fast, apart from the fact he's obviously some kind of, you know, sick genius. But he was doing this thing where he would he had this magazine. He would invite various people, you know, players on the international affairs scene to submit papers and what have you, and then he'd produce his book and booklet every year, and he'd have little mini conferences there. So he was sort of running his own mini Bilderberg over in Harvard at the time. And Schwab, I think, then sort of passed through Harvard at the same time. At this time, he's a bit younger, and so I think they hooked up in some kind of elite manner, and then they
gazed into each other's eyes.
Exactly, both saw nothing.
but look, what about the Nazis? Because we do. I mean, it's really sad, you know, to talk about the passing of Manfred Petritsch, who was actually the son of a Nazi jet propulsion expert in the Second World War. He was born in Argentina. His job was, he got a job straight after school in an investment bank in Switzerland, and then he kind of had enough of the empire and went over to Abkhazia. But he was one of those people who he did some amazing work on the very first Bilderberg conference, the first two or three in the 1950s. And the fact that many of the participants there, although they were sort of posing as just ordinary German businessmen at the conference, turned out later, with research by him and other people, to have been actually quite important, instrumental figures in the Goebbels propaganda ministry, in the finance ministry. So there was definitely a load of undercover Nazis in the very beginning of Bilderberg, not least of which, of course, was the chairman for the first 20 years, Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. But I mean, there is a pretty strong connection with the SS, the Nazis, isn't there?
Yeah, and maybe that, you know, it chimes for different things. Part, you know, a complete absence of moral compass, and, you know, a desire to plan thousands of years into the future. You know, so, you know, there's aspects of fascism which certainly work well in this sort of forum. And, you know,
a desire to other is a big one, and a desire to control.
Absolutely. And the background, the deep background, is just fascinating, you know, and it all comes, you know, all so much intelligence, you know, from, you know, Western intelligence agencies and people, and just the whole thing is the spookiest thing you can imagine, the beginning, with, you know, everyone is CIA or MI6, and MI6 is still there, you know. In you know, John Sawyer's left MI6 and joined BP as a director, and he's on the steering committee, Sir John Sawyer's. And so it's still got, you know, but you get to a certain level of kind of business and intelligence, and it sort of melts into the ether, where it barely links into nation states anymore. You know, they're just kind of these giant operating systems.
Well, I suppose you can imagine someone like Andrew Neil shrugging his shoulders, as he did at Bilderberg in 2013, and say, oh, well, lots of people were Nazis in those days. But, I mean, the fact is, Christian Friedland is from an SS family. Klaus Schwab's father was making weapons for the Nazis. And of course, you've got, like I said, Prince Bernhard. So it's not, I don't, you know, it's important to point out that this doesn't seem to matter really to anybody. And right from the very start in the 1950s at Bilderberg.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, you can, it's tricky to sort of draw a straight line from that to the Bilderberg today, except to say, you know, you can, what you can talk about now is the way that Bilderberg locks in completely to the kind of Western war machine. And, you know, if you wanted to, you know, give a moral critique of Bilderberg, you could start there usefully. If you look at the Washington summit, which was in last year, the 2nd to the 5th of June, there's that Nord Stream article by Cy Hirsch has come out saying that the mines that blew up the pipelines were laid in under cover of a Baltic Sea NATO operation, which began on the 5th of June, which was the last day of Bilderberg. And at that Bilderberg, if you look at who's there, it's pretty much everyone who would sign off on that operation. And I only realise that by saying this, I'm now straying into just arrant speculation. But except to say that, you know, you've got at that meeting, which you know, was literally the day of the days just before this NATO exercise began, at which the Nord Stream mines were laid, you had like the head director of the CIA, William Burns, was there. You had Jake Sullivan, who's the director of the National Security Council, and Cy Hirsch says ran the whole Nord Stream blowing up operation. You've got the director of the Office of Net Assessment from the US, a guy called James Baker, who he's like the top US war strategist, kind of actuary strategist, who says what operations are going to cost and which go ahead and don't, and you know, all of that. And you've also got the Ukrainian ambassador to the US and the CEO of Ukraine's biggest natural gas company, Naftogaz. And so if you were to say who are the people that might conceivably have an interest in this operation, they're pretty much all sitting there at the Mandarin Oriental in Washington, clinking champagne glasses and going, yeah, let's do it.
Well, the important thing is, of course, these places where they meet do get very scrupulously swept for bugs. And that the idea is that they do have to meet face to face and in person, because I've heard people say, well, why don't they do it on Zoom? Well, of course, they're not going to. If a decision like that, which is quite clearly a potential World War III provocation, is being agreed, they would want to make sure that there's nobody listening in.
Absolutely. And I forgot to mention the most important person, the Secretary General of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, was there. And he's Norwegian. And Cy Hirsch says it's a Norwegian-American, was a Norwegian-American operation. So he's there. So literally the big boss is there and everyone else. Absolutely. And so all of these people come, you know, all of these defense ministers and NATO bosses come with all of their, and the CIA director's there. So, yeah, obviously the place is crawling with spooks, and has been absolutely, swept to within an inch of its life for any bugs. So, yeah. It's an extremely high level military intelligence meeting.
Isn't it? I mean, it's interesting. I think also the way they framed the agenda, which was announced to the public, Ukraine was right at the bottom of the list, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. But you know, if you were to look at the agenda as well, it's sort of you can put, you know, some of it together to make it sound like it was an agenda about the Nord Stream pipeline. Like you had NATO challenges and energy security, Russia, Ukraine, you know, it's all there. So who knows, but it is an interesting coincidence of people.
Well, look, one thing that's definitely not a coincidence is Bilderberg was definitely tied in over the years with bringing people into power who were pro-Brussels, pro-EU. And the main reason that was always touted for the European Economic Community, etc., was we need to bring all these countries closer together to avert the threat of war in Europe. Now we've got war in Europe. And these people, in fact, in Brussels, von der Leyen and the rest of them, are actually behind the war.
Yeah, and in some cases, yeah, just running it. I mean, yeah, like Carp. And yeah, and there's, you know, the Ukraine war is obviously like any massive kind of event is just a huge hoovering up of public money into the private coffers, like, you know, like COVID was and is. And, you know, almost anything bad that happens is just that, apart from anything else. It's just a giant money laundering machine that just vacuums up everyone's cash and and hoovers it up into various, you know, billionaires and trillionaires' pockets.
Yeah, it's just another crisis, though, Charlie, really, isn't it? We've got the climate crisis. Oh, gosh, we've got the pandemic, the whatever medical crisis. And this is just another one. But look, for anyone who might be thinking, oh, well, I'm not so sure, I might like to go, but I'm not quite sure. What could people expect if they decide they want to go out to Lisbon and observe, cover, photograph, or just socialise and learn?
Well, I'll be obviously publishing an in-depth guide to the best places to eat and drink in Lisbon, which is key, because, you know, let's face it, if you're going to come to Lisbon, it's the perfect time. And, you know, and if the policing is so heavy handed that you just, it's all a bit too much, you can, you know, disappear to the Time Out food market and gorge. So yeah, there's lots to do, and hopefully there'll be lots of interesting people to chat to. You know, the gang will be reconvening. Josh Friedman, who I mentioned, was the person that found the Mandarin Oriental, and he and Luke Radowski were the only two people outside it. I'm sure they'll be there, and various other regulars and semi-regulars. So it should be an interesting crowd, and I think what will happen probably is there'll be a gradual drip, drip, drip of information and ideas that will come together kind of organically as to what is actually going to take place there, if anything. And, you know, maybe it's just a nice way to meet up and have beers and get some information out to the world.
Well, I mean, one of the things I find so magical about the Bilderberg conferences is their wish to go out and sort of meet the public, even though, I mean, they love to mingle, it seems, on the Saturday lunchtime afternoon. And the great fun that you can have is actually spotting a Bilderberger, because many of them don't appear on our TV screens. I mean, for obviously, you know, the owners of the TV networks don't appear on our TV screens. Many of the big funders of the major political parties, you know, the Goldman Sachs, people like that, don't appear on our TV screens. So these people seem to sort of relish the idea that they're completely anonymous, even though they're running the whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, it may not be as insane as Dresden was, which I think you're referring to, which I think that's the one you went to recently, wasn't it? Where they just all, at one point, it was like a gong went and they all spilled out of this hotel into the streets. And like David Petraeus went jogging through the crowd, etc. And that was weird. Yeah, it was kind of weird. I ended up, you know, having a few words with Peter Thiel and Sam Altman, who runs OpenAI, and various other Bilderbergers, and various little interviews were done by people. I'm expecting there to be less actual direct chatting with them, I'll be honest. But, you know, you never know. They tend to come out for a morning jog. You can kind of jog along and have a chat. Okay. So, yeah, take your jog, your running shoes.
And how do we follow your work these days, Charlie?
Well, I'll probably tweet about it on Deyouk, DeyOok, the Twitter. That's my Twitter handle, @Deyouk, which I don't really do much on except Bilderberg and the occasional bad joke. And I'll do that. But they'll, you know, and I'll try and, you know, be one of the people that sort of, you know, allows other information to come through, other people who are doing stuff, and try and, you know, promote them, and just kind of let there be a general sort of sharing of information and ideas, and who's going where and who's staying at what hotel kind of thing, and, you know, be as open as we can about plenty of it.
Yeah, and the fact that we've got a location such a long time beforehand does mean there may actually be some decent mainstream press coverage, there may be some press coverage. Whether it's decent or not is a whole other question. Anyway, Charlie Skelton, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.